the Who's Your Gladys interview series. I'm Marilyn Suttle, and I'm here with my co-author and co-host, Lori Jill Vest. We are the co-authors of Who's Your Gladys, How to Turn Even Your Most Difficult Customer into Your Biggest Fan.
Hello, everyone. This is Lori. We are so excited to bring you inspiring thought leaders, brilliant business minds, and successful professionals. And these are people with relevant ideas that you can put to use right now to capture and keep your customers. In spite of what's going on with the economy, we're going to give you tools that bring out the best in even your most challenging customers.
Okay, so now get ready. Today's guest is Holly Steele. She is a trailblazing service philosopher who innovated a method of training based on the practices and principles of the world-class concierge. Her clients include Disney, Nordstrom, Aveda, American Express, Visa Signature Card, Hilton and Hyatt Hotels, big names. In 1976, Steele became the first female concierge in the country when she created the desk at the Grand Hyatt Union Square in San Francisco. 2 years later, she was the first American woman to be admitted in the exclusive Le Clay d'Or Association for Concierges. I hope I pronounced that right. She is the author of 3 books, including Ultimate Service, the Complete Handbook to the World of the Concierge, Thank You Very Much, a book for anyone who's ever had to say, May I Help You?, and The Neon Signs of Service. With her team at Steele Media, Holly has produced 3 award-winning instructional DVDs and custom-designed corporate training programs. Welcome, Holly Steele.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Isn't it impressive to hear all these things you've done?
Well, that's so great. I'm listening going, wow, this sounds good.
It does, and we're so happy you're here.
Yeah, well, so am I.
So let's get rolling. We want to, you know, what we love about these interviews is they're short, they're fast, and they give people tons of tools.
Okay, so, perfect.
All right. What qualities are necessary to create a quality service culture?
Well, I believe that, talk about simple tools, but these ideas are really deceptively simple. So I'm going to tell you 5 questions that I really believe that every single employee must have the answers to in order to be able to create a culture of service in your organization. And you're going to hear them and you're going to say, well, those are so simple. And I'm going to challenge you to say, I want you to ask your people today if they can answer every single one of these questions. And there they are. Number one, what do you want me to do? Number two, why do you want me to do that? Number three, how do you want me to do that? Number four, well, how am I going to know how I'm doing? And number five, how are you going to help me to improve? So let me go back a little bit and explain these, because if you really did ask all of your people, could they answer all of these questions? And I'm willing to bet that for most organizations, the answer is no. Because in the what do you want me to do, I believe that many, many times in companies, we have a deep expectation of what we want people to do, but we've never told them what that is. And we've never written it out really, really specifically. And if you haven't, and you're listening to this, just know that you are in very, very good company, because many companies have not figured out that this needs to all be very specifically written down. So are you talking about a basic job description?
No, thank you,
okay.
Maria. No, I'm not talking about a basic job description. And I'm not talking about also basically of how to do the job. So let's do it in terms of the hotel business for an example. So in the hotel business, let's say you have a server, and if you need to have the job description for a server, that's one thing. You need to tell the server that they need to put the knife in second or first, and they don't, you know, put their arm over people while they're serving. That's all within your operating procedures, okay, of what you expect people to do. And a lot of companies have that. But what they don't have is the overarching set of standards that are just really based on service. So if you expect that everyone's going to greet people with a smile and a welcoming demeanor, you need to have it written down as an expectation, and it needs to be understood. And then, so that's the what.
So, for instance, if you have a company, let's say like Four Seasons or Ritz-Carlton or Marriott or Hilton, or these companies, this is, they have all this written down, and it's very, very specific. And yet, it's still overarching, so it leaves enough room for personality. Mm-hmm. So that you don't want to just be for every single person you say, oh, certainly that would be my pleasure. You want to make sure that you leave room for personality, but if you expect that everyone's going to be welcoming, you need to explain to them what that is. Mm. And so we've actually divided it into four very separate things, which is, then again, simple, because all wisdom is simple. So it's the welcome. What do you want people to do with the welcome, which includes the telephone greeting? Mm-hmm. And so first is the welcome, and then it's during the visit. So whether they're in your doctor's office or your store or your hotel or your spa or wherever they are, things happen during the visit. And let's say everything goes well. Well, that's one set of standards. But let's say things don't go well. So you need to have standards about how do you handle the problems. And then they leave. And so that's another set of standards. So it's really basically four things. And then if you wanted to add telephone and professionalism and grooming and things like that, you could. But all of that just needs to be written down. So that's the what. And it's very simple. Then the why, it's my belief that people don't want to do anything unless they understand why they're doing it. So there's a business reason for the why. And that needs to be explained to people. A lot of times we leave people out of that aspect of the equation, of understanding the why are we doing this, and that's really important. And then the how is training. But if you train the how without explaining the why and the what, it doesn't work. Mm. And also, training in and of itself usually doesn't work either. Because if you just have training without any follow-through or follow-up, all you're having is an event. Mm-hmm. So, which if what you want to have is an event, then that's great. And events are fabulous as long as you understand that there won't be any behavior change. Mm-hmm. So the how is the training. But then after the training are the last two, and this is the place that most people fall short. And that is, how am I going to know how I'm doing? Now, any of you listening to this, have you ever taken a training class and then you come back to work and no one ever mentions it again? Mm-hmm. And they never talk about it. It's so common. And so you want to be able to come back into an environment where you are held accountable to what you learned in training. So if you haven't written out your standards and you haven't figured out the what, and you haven't helped people to understand why they should do the what, and then you haven't trained them to do it, or even if you have done those three steps, but then if you come back and no one mentions it, then nothing will happen.
Holly, do you think that that why is what really gets into their heart? Like, that's when they really start to feel it?
I think part of that gets in their heart. But I really think it's the last two steps, Lori. When you come back and it's like, how am I going to know how I'm doing and how are you going to help me to improve? This is coaching. Mm-hmm. And this is really the follow-up. And it's helping people to self-discover. And when you help people to self-discover, that's when it gets in their heart, because it came from them. Mm. And nothing really gets into people's hearts more than their own ideas. And so if you can ask an appropriate series of questions and do that specifically and do that in a way that people understand what you're doing. So what I'm talking about here is saying to people, let's say you're the manager, so you now have been trained to be more of a coach than just a tell manager, because most managers tell you what you did wrong or tell you what they want you to do, mm-hmm. but they rarely ask you. And I believe that piece is so huge, because, I mean, have any of you ever been, you know, told something and then you still don't do it?
Yeah.
And then they
told
Yeah.
So common.
Yes, they tell you again. They tell you again. It's like, but what about if you're asked, what might you do differently to have a different result? Mm-hmm. And then it's your idea. And then it's, are you willing to commit to that idea? Mm-hmm. So that's how a service culture is actually built and sustained, by
wonderful
understanding those five questions. So, great.
Wonderful.
What was the fifth question?
Pardon me?
Could you repeat the fifth question?
Well, it's the how I'm going to know how I'm doing, and then how are you going to help me improve?
How are you going to help me improve?
That's and that is all about helping you to be accountable and to understand self-discovery, and it's also to start with the positive. And you have to start paying attention to what am I doing to that I'm proud of, because we're going to ask you that question.
Yeah. So managers are really, if you want to excel in customer service, the managers really need that high level of skill of managing and bringing out the best in their employees.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because that's so much what doesn't happen. And a lot of times people will say to me, oh, well, there's this really bad concierge at this hotel, and I'll be like, okay, let's talk about their manager. I want to know about their manager, and I want to know how they're being managed, because this stuff, when you have really bad customer service, and of course everyone listening has had an experience of bad customer service,
right?
You want to make that dotted line back to the manager, because it doesn't just happen, you know, from the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's the problem, of course, with having a really fantastic customer service culture, let's say like the Four Seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant thing. It's not an event. It's not every once in a while you discuss it. It's every day, many times a day. And that's why it becomes difficult, because people, although they want it, they when they realize that it's a lot of work to make that really happen, then it's a little bit less desirable.
Nothing comes easy, though, does it?
Well, no, not that I know of, yeah.
Nothing good comes easy. Well, right. Let's switch gears here.
Okay.
In the Preston Wynn chapter of our book,
mm-hmm.
Holly, we talked to you about how the start of the workday should be considered the start of a performance. Can you tell us more about that?
Oh, yeah, that's such a fun topic. So, well, because in my career I started out, you know, as a concierge, and of course I wore this little adorable little outfit, and so I considered it a costume. I wore tails, and it was so much fun, and I considered it a costume, and I would imagine that, you know, this is the kind of stuff that Disney teaches, only I didn't know that at the time. I just thought, oh, well, this is perfect, and I would imagine that it was like lights, camera, action, and I was starting my day because I was going out on stage. Because that's what I imagined that the hotel lobby was like, a stage. And what happened was, for me really, was that I'd heard this story about, actually, the Four Seasons company put together a little booklet about, I don't know, 30-something years ago, which was called The Four Seasons Field Guide to the World of the Concierge, because they were trying to explain the concierge to their guests, because we didn't have concierge in the United States a little over 30 years ago. So they were explaining what they did. And I read this little book, and I read this story, and it went like this. A guest walked up to the concierge and said, you know, your cheeseburgers are really great here. I want you to send one to my brother. He lives in Bahrain, but I want it to arrive hot.
And
the concierge's response, would that be cheddar or blue, sir?
Mm.
So I read that story, and I thought, I'm going to use this. And I would start my day doing this little mantra by saying, would that be cheddar or blue? Would that be cheddar or blue? So that by the time I got to my desk and in my uniform and clicked the thing in my imaginary lights, camera, action in my head to start on my stage, I would have this mindset so that if a guest came up to me and asked me for something difficult, I would think, would that be cheddar or blue, as opposed to thinking, how the hell am I going to get a cheeseburger to Bahrain?
Right.
And
it's so much about how you think.
Yeah.
It really is.
So if you imagine it like you're a performer on a stage, you also get to learn from performers who understand that even if they're not feeling good or they're tired, they still have to do the performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think of yourself that way, it changes how you work. So it's really quite a brilliant concept if you take it to heart and you really do it.
And you really start enjoying your job instead of being stressed out all the time.
Nature.
Yeah.
Nature. There's a lot to learn from performance artists. As a matter of fact, I got really interested in the Actors Studio.
And so I couldn't stop watching it, so I decided that that was making me a little bit crazy, so I decided to write an article about how actors, what customer service providers can learn from actors. So that's on my website, because I realized that actors are such incredible employees, because they'll do almost anything. And they'll work in a team, and they understand all of those things. So I think this concept really, really applies.
Yeah, and you must go on with the show, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But now, that can, like you were saying, sometimes challenges come up, and sometimes emotions come up. And one of the things that, you know, in our book you talk about is that challenging habit that many of us have of needing to be right.
Yeah.
So what advice can you give when you're that person and you want to be right and they're wrong?
Well, you know, I think we want to be really gentle with this concept, because I don't believe that we're ever going to totally get this, and that we're ever going to be in the situation of, okay, I don't ever have to be right again. Good, now we can move on. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that being right is a human imperative. And that we really hold on to it desperately. I also believe that if we're willing, and I think willing is a really, really big word, because you've got to be willing for this concept to enter into you. If you're willing to not have to be right, that is where you can really serve people. Because, and it's also the place where you can personally grow. Because if you're just willing to be, okay, I'm here to serve this person. I'm here to make this person have a good experience. That's my job. I'm not here to be right. So if I can get this, then I can grow leaps and bounds personally, and I can provide a good service. It's an extremely difficult concept, and I believe that we need help with each other to help each other to do this. I mean, I used to have a sign up at my desk that I wrote that says, being right is the booby prize, which means, you know, if you get to be right, well, that's great for about a minute, but basically you lose. The customer loses, you lose, everybody loses by you having to be right. And if you start to look around, for all of you who are listening to this, start to notice now. When you become annoyed with the service that is happening around you, everything, you will notice that what it all really comes down to is this need to be right. I mean, and it can be so subtle, but it hurts. It's like it's so stingy. Now, I was sitting in the front of a plane going from, it was in the Middle East somewhere, and I was coming back. And, you know, you're tired, whatever, but I was flying business class. It was an expensive ticket. And I asked a question of the flight attendant about the meal service. And then they didn't, he said that meal was coming, but then it didn't appear, and it was late. You know, like about a half an hour later or so. And I said, excuse me, but do we have a meal service? And this flight attendant says to me, well, it's the same answer as the last time you asked. Okay.
Oh, ouch.
Ouch. I'm like, okay, really nice. That's what being right's about.
Yeah.
And so it can be subtle like that.
I have a refrigerator magnet that says you can be right or you can be in relationship.
Oh, that's right.
That's
it's great.
A good one.
Yeah, that's so great. So, but again, you know, I want to be really respectful about it. This is not a slam dunk.
Absolutely.
This is a lifetime commitment to your own personal growth, and that the opportunity to work in a job where you're serving other people, it really gives you the whole playing field in order to do that.
Yeah, anytime.
Speaking of the playing field.
Uh-huh.
Do you have some effective role-playing activities that management staff can do to improve their service skills?
Yes, I do, actually. One that I have found to be extremely effective is something that I call finesse over function. So finesse over function is all about the artistry of doing our jobs, and that most people do their jobs with function only. And they absolutely believe that that's what the job is. So let's say you're checking someone in, and you look up and you look at them and you say, checking in. or something like that, and then they check into the hotel. So, and you've checked them in, and you've been pleasant, and it's all been fine. So, great. So that's function. But if you took that to another level, to finesse, what would you do differently? And so if you act that out, because finesse is artistry, so if you act that out, it might look like you would look at someone who was coming in and you would say, good morning, how was your trip? Welcome. May I have your name, please? Great, I see here that you've been with us before. And all, you know, we have something, you know, we were expecting you. All of those things are finesse. So you could act that out. So you go from function, act it out just the way, not bad, because a lot of role plays, this is important, if any of you do role plays in your meetings, a lot of times we'll say, let's act it out bad, let's act it out good. No learning happens there, because we really wouldn't necessarily be bad, but we would be in function, because that's what most people are in. So if you take it to go from function to art to finesse, and then you act it out the two different ways, and then you process that and say, what was the difference?
Ooh, that's powerful.
Yeah, it's very, very powerful. And I actually do it with costumes, make it more fun. So, So that has worked for many years and is really, really effective.
Yeah, and I think it really hones in, because it all sounds like theory until you're actually playing the part and practicing with someone, and then all of a sudden those little blind spots get revealed to you.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other terms that I like that you use, you talk a lot about earning a psychic salary.
Yeah.
Can you share what that is?
Sure. Thanks, Marilyn. You know, it's funny because the psychic salary, it was a term that I coined and trademarked years and years and years ago, and honestly, to do it again, I wouldn't call it that, even though I think it's so clever, and isn't that great, psychic salary? There's a couple reasons why, and I'll tell you what it really is. It's really about the emotional gratification that you receive from your work. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I wouldn't call it psychic salary that I learned years later is it doesn't translate into Spanish.
Oh, that's funny.
And if you work in the hotel business, this is a big deal.
Oh, no.
So I have learned about the idea of explaining it as emotional gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it really is the idea of what you receive from your work when you serve other people. What do you get? What do you get out of it besides the paycheck? And I have had extremely powerful experiences giving classes over the years that people take this to heart and that they understand this. And I think, really, that this question is provocative, because most people don't bother to ask it. They just get dressed, they drive to work, they put on their uniforms, they're doing whatever they're doing, and then they finish their shift, and they don't think about, what am I receiving? Because a psychic salary, this other paycheck, you pay yourself. And so since you pay yourself, you're in charge of how much you make.
Mm.
And so what is the percentage? Because absolutely, some days are better than other days. Some days you might be kind of gritting your teeth and thinking, they don't pay me enough to do this. And yet, on another time, somebody might be really grateful for what you have done with them, or you may feel a sense of pride that you didn't have to be right, or whatever it is that you're earning, your own psychic salary, your own emotional gratification. So that if you don't know what it is, it's very hard to go back to it on the days that are difficult.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you about this, because I had a lady in a workshop, and she was said, oh, there's this one. There was just this one. She just didn't deserve me to be nice to her.
Right. Right.
Oh, no.
Right. Wow. Right.
That's a good time to think of the psychic salary, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because what is your job? You know, is your job to decide who you're supposed to be nice to or not? Because, because I love that you brought that up, Marilyn, because this whole idea of frontline service mm-hmm. is all about emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, yes, you need the standards, and I talked about that in the beginning, you absolutely do, but it all has to have the surround sound of the emotions, because this is what's real for people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets them moving.
Absolutely. It's the emotion. And for some people, they would rather be right than in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And those people need to not work for you.
Yeah.
Seriously. Well, Holly, in your book, The Neon Signs of Service, you talk about the phrase notice, name, choose. Can you tell us what that means?
I can. And the notice, name, and choose is really about being conscious, paying attention, so that you notice what is going on around you. You notice what are the things that do cause stress for you, that do create negative emotions. So let's say we'll use this particular example that you just said, they didn't deserve me to be nice to them. What is it that that person did that made you come to that conclusion? Because if that person did it, probably another person would do it too. And then maybe another one. So it's probably not an isolated incident. So we need to be on the lookout to notice what is it that pushes our buttons and makes us behave in ways that are not quite as service-oriented as we might like to think of ourselves as. So I noticed when I was on the front line that there were, let's say, about six different attitudes that just used to annoy the heck out of me. And so once I noticed them, because no growth ever happens unless you notice something first. So once I noticed it, then I was able to work with it, okay? And then I had to own it. So that's what the name is. It's notice, then it's name. Own it. Is it frustration? Is it anger? Is it annoyance? What is it that is pushing my buttons, your buttons, enough to make you want to be right? And then the last part, if you own it, it's like, well, this really upsets me. This hurts my feelings. You own that. It's hurtful. And then you still choose to take the high road.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, and again, lifelong learning, not something you get in a four-hour seminar. It's a willingness to be able to think like this. And I just want to tell you one quick thing because it was so funny. So I wrote this and I did this and I had all this stuff and I was actually doing something at Esalen. And Esalen is one of the first places, actually it was the first place in the human potential movement. And I had this opportunity to work with the staff at Esalen. And it was wonderful. We all sat around. We did the psychic salary. I mean, it was a real touchy-feely kind of place. So it was easy for me. It was great. So anyway, I'm doing this notice, name, and choose there. And the whole room says, oh, that's Gestalt. I said, really?
Oh,
I had no idea. This whole thing was all based on Gestalt therapy, and I didn't know, but that's what it was. So that's what notice, name, and choose is.
Got it.
But you can't
Got
change
it.
Something you don't acknowledge, and this just falls so beautifully into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you talk about the six attitudes, there are, like, we call that challenging person Gladys, but Gladys is different for different people. So what are some of your, what do you see as the top instigators of people's buttons being pushed?
Well, I'll be happy to tell you, but I think the most important thing, because I think, you know, when I wrote the Neon Signs of Service book, I wrote the attitudes. Mm-hmm. And I honestly thought that they had nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. They were just those attitudes, and they annoyed me, but they didn't have to do with me.
Right.
Right? So years later, I realized I've been teaching this for years. And I went, oh, they all are me.
Mm-hmm.
I do all those things.
That's why it bugs us.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's like, wow, that was enlightening to me to understand that. So what annoys me? Well, I mean, like, it would annoy me sometimes if people would ask ridiculous questions. Like, you know, if it's raining, am I going to get wet? Like, yes! You know, would you get wet where you lived? You know, I mean, things like, you know, you don't say that, but it's kind of like, oh, God. But at the same time, I learned that that annoyed me, so I learned how to laugh at that inside and then just handle it and deal with it. Something, and I thought, well, have I ever been stupid when I've traveled? Yeah. You know,
right.
And just things like that, or that, people like, I want what I want, and I want it now. And I think, have I ever been like that? Yeah. I mean, am I like that all the time? No.
Right.
But sometimes.
Yeah.
And so to be able to look at that from a conscious place, really powerful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really in growth producing and powerful.
So, well, our time is just about up. Is there anything else you're burning to tell us?
Well, I'm only, well, when I always talk, I always talk about my four favorite words. And it's the name of my company, which is Thank You Very Much, Inc. And so my four favorite words are thank you very much. And when you realize that what your job is to be in the thank you very much business, no matter what that is. Even if you work for, you know, for a, an oncologist, you're in the thank you business because you want people to walk out and say thank you for being so kind to me. Mm-hmm. So I really think that if we can focus on thank you and kindness and focus on those things, that then our service will handle itself so much more.
Well, Holly, thank you very much for sharing your expertise.
My
and
pleasure.
I know our listeners are going to want to know more about what you do and how to get, perhaps get your newsletter or order your products. And can you give us your website and contact information?
I'd be delighted to. It's www.thankyouverymuchinc.com. Mm-hmm. And so it's thankyouverymuchinc.com. And I have all kinds of information there and articles, and I even have my little red book called Thank You Very Much, a book for anyone who's ever said, may I help you, that you can download off of there.
Oh, that's great. And what's your Twitter handle?
It's Holly Steele.
Oh, and spell that for us, please.
H-O-L-L-Y, S like Sam, T like Tom, I-E-L.
Wonderful. Thank you again, Holly. You've been listening to the Hoosier Gladys interview series with Holly Steele. For more information about our book, Hoosier Gladys, How to Turn Even the Most Difficult Customer into Your Biggest Fan, you can visit our website at www.hoosiergladys.com. That's WHOSYOURGLADYS. Or you can email us at Lori@hoosiergladys.com. That's LORI. Or Marilyn@hoosiergladys.com. Thank you.
And have a good day. And thank you again, Holly. I appreciate you being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care.